From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Thursday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready coming to you from rainy Oxford. Rain pretty much all night. Still pretty overcast this morning. A few more showers later in the day before we get a lot of sunshine. It looks like it's really, really good. Yet tomorrow through about next Wednesday or Thursday, nothing but big yellow cartoon suns on the forecast.
It's supposed to rain all day today. Like until 9 or 10 tomorrow morning, and then it's supposed to turn really, really nice.
Yeah. So there's your weather forecast.
There you go.
Basically.
No, didn't even have to use Freddie.
I'm basically what, James Spann or whatever his name is over
you
there?
You are. You're James Spann.
Yeah. Used to be Dick Rice and some other people in this in Mississippi.
James Spann makes a lot of money.
Doing some weather.
So we were just talking about, do you ever watch the local news? And the answer is, yeah, for the weather.
And you can get, like I said, you know, the dude in Tupelo we always talk about,
he's pretty good.
Yeah, and he puts it all on Facebook Live.
He has almost a cult following.
He does.
Well, we need to get him on.
You want him on the podcast?
I would love to get him on the podcast.
Okay. Well, you know, he got his moment, and he took advantage of it. He got the tornado in Tupelo, the moment. We've talked about this.
I mean, sure. He's really good. See, I don't mind when you do the Facebook thing. You can do a Facebook thing all day long. I mind when you cut into programming with, hey, 6 hours from now, there's a chance it all goes south. Or, hey, it's raining. We need to show you the rain.
And then they sit there and stick on it. And we just repeat ourselves over and over and over and over and over again.
We've bought the Doppler Viper 1648 here at the... We're going to, by God, use it right now. Let's go to the Doppler Viper. Shut up. Just go back to the damn game.
What about the big green map on the bottom of your screen? You okay? Not cutting into programming.
It doesn't bother me as much. And I understand there are people out there that don't have the weather app on their iPhone. I understand those people exist. It bugs me. It doesn't bug me to the point that I'm bugged.
So you'd like to discriminate against people without iPhones, is what you're saying?
Ideally, yes, but but I'm willing.
How long before it's just the standard? Because we always get there. You always get a technological standard where you stop doing something. I mean, finally in the press boxes, we stopped getting the fax machines with the scores on them. About 3 or 4 years ago when it would be 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Vanderbilt in South Carolina played the 11 o'clock in the morning game on Jefferson Pilot or whatever it was back then, and you would go, they'd come through, and Neil would like to kick the crap out of the person bringing the papers because he doesn't like the clutter around his computer.
I don't want all
he'd like
papers.
To save a tree. But you would get the paper, it would go Vanderbilt 10, South Carolina 7, 6 minutes left, first quarter.
You're like, dude, that game's been over for 6 hours.
Yeah, everybody would have it up on ESPN or whatever on their computer and just handing the fact that it said like PA sports ticker or something at the top of it.
Yeah, and I'm a big believer. Just wait on all the paper. Just bring me the thing at the end of the game.
You don't even like end of a quarter stats.
No, if I want them, I can get them on the internet.
The quickie stats don't bother me. The play-by-play bothers me. Actually, the play-by-play would do me more good because I could get the quickie stats easier on the computer. But
yeah, in basketball, I like the play-by-play because I can go back and look at a run.
Mm-hmm. You can get that on computer, too.
You can get that on your computer,
too. The media has its own little neat
game
tracker thing, and it does a lot of stuff for us.
I just don't – who knew that I was such a tree hugger?
Yeah, so – Ole Miss beat ULM 5-3 yesterday. A little closer game. Sean Johnson took a no-hitter into the seventh inning. Left after 83 pitches when a kid from ULM had a leadoff single in the seventh. Got a little squirrely at times. ULM got the lead run at the plate, but Rebels prevailed.
I didn't hear all the ULM jokes yesterday when the Warhawks gave the Rebels a little scare. I didn't sense a little more respect for the boys.
They got back on their bus, 12-34. Rebels now 29-17. Ole Miss headed to Florida this weekend. I've got a look at kind of the baseline for Ole Miss. Look, if Ole Miss gets incredibly hot and goes on some crazy run, then okay, it's going to be irrelevant. But if Ole Miss just kind of treads water the rest of the way, finishes around 500 in the league, I've got kind of a look on where that could put them, what the past history says about that. That'll be up on RebelGrove.com later today.
Most of the projections right now have them as a 3 somewhere.
Yeah, Baseball America with a 3, D1 Baseball with a 3, and then Perfect Game has them as a fairly safe at-large, but they don't do the 2-3 thing. They just kind of list the at-large teams.
Gotcha.
On a list. They don't actually do a bracket, which probably hurts hits because everybody likes the little bracket projections.
Since I know there are people out there asking this question, it's probably in your story, but I'll ask it here.
Sure.
They are 11-10 in the league.
That is correct.
Realistically, to get into the host conversation, they would have to go 7-2 down the stretch.
I mean, I guess it's 17. You at least could watch it and see what happens, just because that's normally standard, if you will.
Right.
And you make a lot of money from the NCAA. Let's keep it real here.
Sure.
But, yeah, 18 is probably the number just based off.
So, minimum of 6-3.
Yeah, 16 has done it before. It's not doing it this time.
Nah, it's too many teams.
Yeah, not doing it. I mean, Ole Miss is 6th in the West right now.
Wow. League's a bitch.
I mean, there's 6 teams in the West with over 500 records in the league. And then there's Alabama. So, that's where it is. Ole Miss has by far the toughest remaining schedule in the league. That's in the story, too. But they are
at Florida, Texas A&M at home.
At Auburn. They're 2 games tougher than anyone else in the league, and then a lot tougher than some teams in the league. Watch out for Vanderbilt if you want to buy some stock. Vandy's sitting there at 10-10 right now. Well, the easiest schedule in the league. They only face the rest of the way teams with a 35% winning percentage in the league. So
who's that?
I'm assuming it's like Alabama, Georgia, and Tennessee or something. It'd have to be really bad team. Maybe it's not those 3, but it's at least 2 of those 3 because that's the only way you can get there.
Okay.
I don't know exactly, though. I have to look it up. But anyway, South Carolina also with a very easy schedule remaining. However, Clark Schmidt had his surgery yesterday, so obviously he's not pitching for the Gamecocks.
That sucks.
Interview-heavy show today. We're going to talk to Barrett Salee, college football expert. Is he latched on someone? I know he's doing the XM show. What else is Barrett doing?
I'm not sure. He must be doing some freelancing stuff. Barrett's really good. He's like a lot of these people. He's going to land on his feet. He basically already has.
Yeah. So we're going to talk to him. We're also going to talk to Chris Landry of LandryFootball.com. What happened? We taped a beer garden with Chris Landry. That will be up. Actually, if you have iTunes, it's up now. With a broad NFL draft spectrum stuff. However, the Ole Miss portions we are including on the show today. Yep. So listen to the show. You get the Ole Miss portion of Chris Landry, who had the Evan Engram pick a couple picks before it actually happened, and more on Ole Miss. So about a 25-minute interview with Chris Landry. It's already been taped.
I talk about Evan. We talk about Chad Kelly at length. DJ Jones, Marquise Haynes,
okay. Even
a little bit on Shea Patterson, some Eli Manning in there. It is the first 25 minutes, which is what you'll hear on this podcast, is as much exclusive Ole Miss as you can do talking about the draft. We venture off a little into some other stuff because that's sort of how podcasts work. But then if you want to hear the rest of it, and if you like football, you do. It's on the beer garden, the whole 55 minutes. The last 30 minutes is kind of a review of the draft. Some talk about who did well, who didn't do well. We talk about Adrian Peterson's role with New Orleans. Marshawn Lynch's role with the Raiders. Some stuff like that. If you like football, you'll like this. And again, I plug it in the thing. I'm going to plug it again now. If you like football and you like scouting and you like college football and you like pro football and you like how the two interrelate, LandryFootball.com is a really good resource. For those of you who really like in-depth football, it's as good as anything you'll find anywhere, including Feel Still. So check it out.
Get to one of our interviews in a second, though. First, a little bit of news. We'll find out more today, I think, maybe tomorrow. Ryan Olenek left the game yesterday with what Josh Porter, Ole Miss's trainer, believed to be a concussion during the third or fourth inning yesterday. Lead off to the fourth, there was a pop-up in shallow center field. Greg Kessinger going back, Ryan Olenek coming in. I heard one of them call for the baseball, but honestly, I don't know which one it was. Either way, neither one of them stopped. They ran into each other pretty hard. Olenek went down, was on a knee for a while, and then was exited the game as they believe that he might have a concussion. So we'll hear more when we get it. Just kind of happens. Need to communicate better. Someone at least did call it. My assumption is Gray called it, but Ryan had priority, and they just hit. That's my guess, but I don't
happens
know.
In the big league level. It just happens. And sometimes if both people are calling it.
Especially with Gray backpedaling, he has no idea where Olenek is.
Well, and you can be backpedaling, your voice is projecting forward, and Olenek is running, and maybe he's saying, I got it, I got it, I got it.
Yeah. And nobody peels off. And
Gray is so focused on, while he's saying, I got it, I got it, I got it.
He's trying to backpedal at full speed, and there's.
And it happens.
Yeah.
It happens. I've seen. Well, I mean, Kyle Schwarber lost a season last year to it. It happens. It's bad when it does, too. I've seen some scary ones.
I mean, the good news for Ole Miss is that both of them weren't injured, because I was sitting here thinking, I said, obviously it's a problem no matter what. I mean, it's two of your best players. Let's keep it real. But Kyle Watson is both their backups. And then it kind of goes into this weird deal. Yeah, he has to really play a lot in that case. So we were trying to figure out what would a lineup look like if both of them actually were out for a couple of days. But anyway, hopefully Ryan's not out. We'll find out more again. Check on that. They are traveling to Gainesville today and then start that series tomorrow night there. Let's see. Anything else pressing going on? Not that I'm really aware of. But podcast brought to you in part by the Oxford Exxon. Highway 6 West in Oxford. Get the Plenty Card. Save money with multiple retailers who go together to let you earn points and save money. Hulu, Nationwide, Rite Aid, American Express, and more with the Plenty Card. When I fill up, it just asks you, are you a Plenty Card member? You swipe it, save money at the tank, get those points along the way. Lunch specials, got some craft beer specials, got more there at the Oxford Exxon and Oxford Crystal next door. Get free coffee with breakfast items this week, couple more days for that, as well as get a lot of wings and get a lot of crystals for $19.99. So check that out if you're hosting a party or anything. Good way to feed you on the cheap of good food there with the Oxford Crystal, coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. ClarkFordInc.com is the website. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for, and he'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. Honestly, it is that simple. It's right to the bottom line. There's no haggling. It's just an incredibly efficient, easy, enjoyable way to make your car purchase. So you get your quote, and then you have two choices. You can go shop it and shop it and shop it and shop it and shop it. It's cool. It is your right. You can. It is your time. Go for it. Or you can trust me and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they have done for listeners of this podcast and the Beer Garden podcast all over the South. And that is take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. It's very simple. And then do yourself a favor at the end of your deal, right about the time that you're finalizing everything, say, hey, Corey, I heard about Clark Ford on the Oxford Exxon podcast, on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden podcast. If you want to be really nice to us, you mentioned both podcasts, you'll save $500 right there off the bottom line at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900, ClarkFordInc.com.
Let's jump right into it now. Let's talk to Chris Landry of LandryFootball.com.
All right, Chris, we'll start off talking about some of the Ole Miss guys that got drafted. Obviously, the first one, you were the first person that I saw pretty much break it. Evan Engram goes 23 overall to the New York Giants. I guess when you came on about a month ago, you said you would not be surprised if Engram went in the first round, but you had him going later in the first round. When did his stock kind of jump to the point where he went 23rd?
Well, I don't know that it really jumped, Neil. If you look at first-round grades, the average that each team has for first-round grades is about 18. So anything, and it'll be a little different. There'll be a half a dozen guys that'll be, different in terms of the bottom of their first-round grades. And to me, Evan was that guy that was that high second round grade value that was going to go in the first round. You just do the numbers with 32 picks. Anything from 19 to 32 kind of falls into that area of the likelihood of going in the first round with second round grades, although there are other guys that could you know, factor in. With him, what I really liked about him and his chances of going in the first round was the fact that, you know, he's not a tight end. He's a weapon. He's a big receiver. He's a big slot. He's a guy that's going to, in the modern day game of football, pro football, he's going to be a big time weapon. And they've got they've worked to try to get Eli some weapons. They still need some work to do to protect him up front. But when you think about it, with that in Brandon Marshall to Odell Beckham to Sterling Shepard and now Evan Engram, they've got the ability to run four wides, three wides very often and have big-time playmakers to be able to check the ball down to. So I just think he's a big-time talent that is in the Jordan Reed type of, you know, player mode that can really be effective and run the offense. So in fact, that's what the Redskins, who the Redskins run their offense through, and I think Evan could be that type of guy.
He helps them immediately. Wouldn't you think that's – I know most first-round picks, the expectation is they play right away, but looking at their system, he's a guy that is going to be asked to play quickly, I would think.
Oh, yeah, they'll get him in there. Now, will he learn how to do everything right away? No, it's a process, and I think he'll play as much as his, you know, his assignment level and his ability to execute that will allow him, but I would expect him to have an early impact. Now, early impact doesn't mean – you know, ton of balls, ton of catches. It just means that this is going to be very difficult to line up against the Giants and try to match up. And he's going to be difficult size-wise for a lot of corners. And it's really going to be a challenge for these athletic safeties with some size and length to try to defend him in the seam. So he's going to have an early impact, I would think.
Sticking with the Giants for a minute, are they good enough up front for all of this to matter? I mean, Eli, and some of the pass protection stuff, I think I've read the Giants saying, hey, some of it was on him. They were never really able to establish a running game a year ago. They struggled to protect him. Teams didn't have to blitz a lot to get to him. He had to get rid of the ball quicker than I think he wanted to quite frequently. That's a long answer, a long question. Are they good enough up front for all of the weapons to even matter?
I think the protection's going to have to change. And you know, the problem is they don't have a quality left tackle type of player. Eric Flowers is not proven to this point to be a left tackle. They're going to continue with that. I like them at left guard and at center. They're in pretty good shape in the interior. But the tackle position is still a weakness. There's, you know, people have criticized the draft because they weren't able to address it. Well, you know, what is must be understood, it wasn't a real good year for tackle draft. There are a couple of spots where they could have had a guy. Possibly would it have been a major upgrade over what they had? No. So it's difficult. I think that there is always a possibility with some people with a little depth, they might be able to add a veteran to the mix there and help that. I think what they'll try to do is they'll try to work with all these weapons that we're talking about is just, you know, get Eli to not work so much off a deep drop and get rid of the ball a little quicker. I think that's what they're going to have to do, and that's why I said they're going to have to adjust their protections accordingly because you can't run, you know, the depth of your routes correspond to your depth of your drops, and you got to be able to protect that. And right now it's a problem. And the running game is an issue. They're going to go with Paul Perkins as their main guy. So if there's, you know, a weakness in the skill position is that they don't have that dynamic running back. Now, they could add LeGarrette Blount. It's one of the possibilities that could help them certainly in short yardage and goal line. So we'll see. Still some work to be done, but obviously protection-wise, I would say no. When you look at that division, though, they're kind of in the mix. I mean, everybody in that division is good, but everybody's flawed. And the safe with the Giants. Same with the Giants. The Redskins are flawed, but have some qualities. The Eagles are getting better. And the Cowboys are the, I think, the favorite, and certainly are very skilled on offense and getting better on defense, but, you know, still flawed on that side of the ball. So I think they're going to be more competitive.
Ole Miss had a couple of guys taken fifth, sixth round. DJ Jones goes fifth round to the Giants. Not to the Giants, the 49ers. Derek Jones, the cornerback, played a lot of different things at Ole Miss, goes sixth round to the Jets. Either one of those guys have a better chance than the other to stick?
You know, I think DJ is got a chance to maybe stick. We'll see after, you know, after the first round of cuts if he can make it and be a depth guy. You know, I think the Jets really went all out to improve their secondary and address that high. Derek's going to have to be a demon on special teams. There's no question about it. But I think they're both, I would say, maybe slightly less than 50-50 of making the final roster, but both have a chance.
All right, let's get into the Chad Kelly thing because I think it's fascinating, and I know that you talked about him a lot. A month ago, you said there were off-the-field issues. That obviously was the case. There were injury issues that were very clear as well. He's the last pick in the draft. Goes to Denver. Is that good for him, or would he have been better off at that point not being drafted and having his sort of, for lack of a better word, his pick of places where he could have gone?
Well, certainly, you know, having your pick is better, but I don't know that he could have found a better place. He's gone with a very good quarterback coach, and he's certainly in an organization that took a young quarterback in Paxton Lynch last year, but is still trying to find their way. And, you know, I think it's a good situation. It, you know, he can compete. He can make the case that if he went behind more of an established starter and could kind of, you know, just compete in anonymity, maybe better. But I still think he'll have some of that. Here's what it really comes down to, Chad, is if you look at the – and I call it maturity issues. I don't think the young man is – I think the young man has got a lot of good in him, and I think he is a good kid. I think he's just immature and has made dumb decisions, which, yes, it's part of youth, but, you know, part of being a leader is rising above that and making sure that you handle your business and not only be competitive on the field, but be a leader off the field in terms of how you conduct yourself. That's what you have to do. And, you know, he's got some work to do on that. I think that probably, if you were to put it, would have put him somewhere, dropped him somewhere into the fourth round area. You throw in the medical issues and the unfortunate injury at his pro day, it takes him down even further because now you've got what we call a multiple shield guy. You put normally the way you do it, way I've always done it, is you put a guy from a football grade standpoint where he belongs, and then you put a medical shield if it applies, if you've got a medical grade that warrants it, and a character shield that, you know, or your maturity shield, and he's got both of them. So, you know, it doesn't mean that, hey, that's it for him, and quite the opposite. It's an opportunity sometimes for these younger guys to realize that, you know, even if you play well and you make big plays and you pull upsets over Alabama and you do that, it doesn't mean you know, it's okay to do what you want to do, when you want to do it, how you want to do it, where you want to do it. You've got to conform yourself and mature and be a man, because now there's zero tolerance. They move on from anybody in this league, and they'll certainly move on from you. So he's got everything in front of him. He's got the physical skills that are greater than a seventh round pick. So now it's about working on, you know, Chad the person, and the medical stuff is going to take care of itself, and, you know, good hope there and good wishes there. And you just work to rehab and do all the things, and then get in there and learn and compete, keep your nose clean. And, you know, I have a feeling that, and this is maybe the glass half full part in me, that the guys like this will respond in a positive way. How you deal with frustrations, because now you're not the star quarterback at Ole Miss. You're just some guy trying to make a roster somewhere in the NFL. It's Denver, and you're not going to get as many reps as you want, or you're not. They're not going to be as patient with you. You make mistakes, you'll get less reps. I mean, It's those type of things that become frustrating. And if you are of the mindset that that's how you're going to handle frustration, you're going to show more immaturity and, you know, you scream out and what have you, well, then you're not going to make it. If you're going to take that and let it motivate you, then I think there's good things ahead for him. So it's really up to him. It is really not about his situation. His situation's a good one, and it's just a matter of how he deals with it.
Let's assume for the sake of this question that his knee and wrist heal completely and that he's back to 100% health. Just obviously, if that's not the case, then it's problematic. But let's just assume that it is. You're familiar with the Broncos. You're familiar with damn near every team. What is their quarterback situation? I know it's Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch. I've heard different things about perhaps the Broncos not being completely happy with Lynch so far. What kind of window of opportunity is there for Kelly, you know, assuming that the body heals and that he does all the right things off the field?
Well, for Denver's situation, let's take Lynch. Good young man, you know, tries hard, but has not picked up things very quickly and has not maybe learned. You know, it's like when you go into college, you tend to sometimes, if you're fairly smart in high school, you don't develop study habits, and then you get into college and you get lost a little early until you learn study habits and how to study film, and that's where Paxton Lynch is. They're not happy with how he's progressed. It's mainly because he hasn't picked things up well enough or quickly enough. Why is that? Well, I think it's not laziness, but just not quite doing everything he needs to do and putting maybe in the time. So it's you know, a work ethic issue to a little degree. And if you're 90% in on that, which people may say is good, you're going to fall behind. You got to be all in. So that's where kind of he is. And he's got physical skills that are as good as anybody and good enough to be further along than he is. Two, Trevor Siemian has not been healthy and he's got some issues. He is a guy that's been a little bit more mobile, a better fit for a Gary Kubiak system. Gary's obviously now gone. With Mike McCoy running the offense, Trevor has a little better, much better feel for the offense, I should say. And it's just from a physical standpoint is capable, but ideally not what you're looking for. So they're in a little bit of a pickle there. To compound things, they are not very good on the offensive line. Were not last year. Tried to address it this year. Signed Ron Leary in free agency. Drafted Garrett Bowles out of Utah to try to fix that. Their running game and their offensive line in terms of protection and run blocking was poor. So you throw that combination in last year where you don't have an aid of a running game. You put a lot on a quarterback that's either physically limited or in the case of Paxton wasn't ready to play. And yeah, the defense is good, but you know, everybody who just kind of, you know, just blew off and thought that they did nothing on offense when the year they won the Super Bowl, well, they won with defense, but the offense allowed them to win it. You know, Peyton's last year got him into the right play, set the protections right. You know, it kind of covered up some of the ills on the offensive line, got him into some, you know, six-man boxes so they can run the football well enough and allow the defense to win it. Last year, without that savvy presence at quarterback and without the play up front, their offense took a major step back. And so now the problem is, okay, they want to throw the football more. They want to go back and be – you know, more balanced on offense, which one of these quarterbacks can do it. I don't expect Chad to be the guy, but you know, I think that right now that Trevor Siemian is definitely the one from a experience and understanding of the offense standpoint better, and Paxton Lynch certainly would have an edge over Chad in terms of his experience in the system. So what Chad has to do is just have to work really hard to become the hardest worker in that room, learn that offense, you know, develop the confidence in the coaches to get opportunities and to get snaps in preseason. That's ought to be his goal, and to be a sponge. And as you mentioned, the health part is just going to have to come on its own pace.
A couple more Ole Miss questions before I shift to the general draft. Demore Stringfellow left school early, probably for a number of reasons. It did not, at least on draft day, draft weekend, work out for him. He signs as an unrestricted free agent, undrafted free agent with the Miami Dolphins. Why did a guy that came out early who, you know, told people, hey, I'm hearing third round grade, why did he fall where he fell, and is there any chance he can make a roster?
What these guys don't understand, Neil, is, and it's the same thing with Malachi Dupree and many others, Isaiah Ford from Virginia Tech, Noah Spence from Ohio State, they all were drafted late, seventh round late, and many of them were undrafted free agents. I tell them all the time, just because you hear you're a third round grade, you got to remember there are a bunch of receivers with third round grades. Third round grades don't mean you're going in the third round. It means you've got a grade that is in a have a chance to make and contribute category, which puts you as a third round value. But when you got 25 receivers with that type of grade, then you're just one of a bunch of guys, and a guy that's maybe just the same size but a little quicker or a little faster or somebody that's a little bigger is going to be more appealing. And so this is where the problem comes to. And I always tell these guys, you know, if you're not going to be one of these top 6 to 8 receivers in this draft, you should always come back, because you're going to end up being in that group, that cluster of guys where there's, you know, 2 dozen of you, and you might be taken in the third round. You might be taken in the seventh round or not at all. And there's nothing that you did. It's just, it's kind of what, it's like, you know, it's like, what flavor do you want? And some guys want a guy that's a little bit faster, a little bit bigger. They're looking for specific things for their team and their system. And you may or may not shape up. If you're not one of the elite guys, go back. And so it happens every year. Every year, it's the same thing with the same type of guys. And, you know, you want to come out, it's fine. A lot of these guys stop going to class and they have nowhere to go. But it is frustrating from my standpoint for the consul have to do this every year. I mean, it's since we've had the influx of, you know, I've been doing this now, 82 was my first year as a part-time scout. It's been, I would say, about 15 years now where you've had a lot of these underclassmen to where a lot of them don't go where they think. And it's like pressing the button on the recorder, and it's the same speech every year.
Yeah.
It's just with different kids. And I just, you know, they don't. So why they get grades, come back. You know, the committee doesn't give them. They give them, hey, first, second round, come back. So what they're getting is an agent telling them that, yeah, well, you're a third-round guy. Well, they think they're going to go in the third round. The agent, I hate to say it, doesn't care, because they'll move on to the next player and the next one and the next one. It's a numbers game. It's like sales, you know, dialing. You know, you can dial 10,000 calls. You'll get somebody to give you money if you're in the real estate, in the stockbroker business. Well, the agent businesses, they just chew these guys up, you know, one after the other. And, you know, they don't know who's going to get there. They'll tell them, hey, you come here. I know guys. None of that matters. That's all lies. But, you know, he's a good player. He's got a chance. If he had come back, could he have improved himself? I think so. Dramatically? Maybe, probably not, but you don't know. But I always tell guys, think about this. You've got an opportunity to either get your degree or get closer towards your degree and continue to play football, which is going to develop your skills. So you're going to develop your life skills and your football skills further, and then come play football. Yeah, I know. Well, but you could get injured. Well, my goodness. I mean, you could get injured doing anything. It's a volatile game. If you're worried about getting injured in football, you should have done something else, because that's just not realistic. I think the whole getting injured thing is more in place if you're going to be a top 10 pick in the draft. Most of these guys are not. Continue to play football. You had a chance to be in a really good system, really good coaching staff. You do a lot of production. You get closer towards your degree, and then you get your chance next year, which you may not make it in. But even then, but look at how much better you are as a person and as a football player, a lot of these guys want to come out. If you're a big guy, you're a big lineman, and you do that, you're going to get a chance. A player that's just as good as his at his position, that's an offensive tackle or a defensive tackle or a defensive lineman, it's gone in the third round because it's supply and demand. And everybody, just take the Division I schools. You got 128 schools. Everybody's got basically four starters at receiver. Start doing those numbers, and they all start to look alike. It's just hard to separate yourself unless you're one of the elite guys.
Marquise Haynes made the decision to come back for his senior season. A year ago, it obviously worked out for Evan Engram. Evan had a third-round grade. Who knows where he would have gone? He ends up going in the first round. Financially, that is a monumental victory for him. What do you? I know as we're 11 and a half months out from the NFL draft, did Haynes make the right decision, and what's his ceiling?
I do for the reasons I just said, and apologize for the soapbox here, but nope. You know, it's
good.
I'm a big it's a big proponent of that. I think again, it'll help him develop further. And again, we don't develop guys in the NFL. There's not enough time, and I think your best way to develop is college, and that gives you a much better chance to succeed. And you hear this too. You know, well, if you come out early, you start your NFL clock sooner, and you get closer to your second contract. They're not going to be a second contract if you don't get a first one. So what's the best opportunity to get your first one? So I think in his case, he's got a chance. There's no question that his chances are much better if he continues to play. It's not like he gave up something. It's not like he was going to be someone that would have gone high. I mean, I think he would have just been another guy who can now improve himself and become a much better player in the next level by producing and developing his skills more in college.
Last thing on Ole Miss. I'm just curious, and if you haven't gotten this far, just feel free to go, Neil. That's a stupid question, and we'll move on. You have any early impressions from a prospect standpoint on Shea Patterson?
Well, I have looked at him. I certainly saw him out of high school, and I think he's got a lot of ability. You know, the best thing he's got going, he's working under a coach that really knows how to get the most out of quarterbacks. He knows how to challenge him, and he knows how to develop their skill sets, particularly at the college level. And I think he's got a lot of ability. I'm excited about him. You know, now that and I've got a little more work post draft, but what I tend to do schedule wise is after that is when I start to dive headfirst into spring practice, college practice tape. And then, yeah, I'll look at the coaching version of the spring games. But more importantly, the spring practice stuff helps me. And as I start to get ready and put all the breakdowns on the website for, you know, all the teams, it really helps me get a feel for how a guy maybe has progressed from just some mechanical things or things like that. Spring practice has to be parceled into different things, individual things, and how it conceptually comes together. But, you know, it's not the same as games, obviously. But it's kind of like watching somebody on the driving range and seeing that their swing is getting better and seeing how it might translate to the round. That's kind of what you look at in spring practice. So I did get a chance to see their spring game on TV, but not broken it down yet. But I like him, and I think he's got a good future. I think the offense is still – their offense ain't going anywhere. They're still going to be pretty good.
That was Chris Landry on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline. Rebel Locker Room, Neil, we got stuff going on here soon, as well as only one more baseball weekend at home, though. That's what's crazy. Parrish and Alford and I were talking about it yesterday. Last midweek was yesterday, and then Texas A&M, and next week, the last three-game series. So Ole Miss on the road, Ole Miss softball team trying to actually play their way into a bit of maybe a host situation if they could finish another weekend strong. Although I saw somewhere they actually fell in the polls. I don't understand how that happens after you beat Alabama 2 out of 3.
They fell in the polls, but their RPI is like 18.
Oh, is it up? Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. I don't know.
That's what I read. I'm not going to lie to you all and pretend that I've been following softball. I have been following a little bit, but I think their RPI is like 18 or 19. So they're in position to maybe host if they can finish hot. Tickets to all those games, OleMissTix.com, OleMissTix.com, football season tickets as well. And as Chase mentioned, the Rebel Locker Room, place to go to get all of your officially licensed Ole Miss gear, all the colors, all the styles there at the Rebel Locker Room. The podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. He's an Oxford-based REMAX legacy realty agent. Harry's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than he does. Go to his site, HarryAlexander.com. Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, look no further than Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. New and previously owned vehicles. Also, great lease deals there at Grenada Nissan. The podcast also brought to you by Snooze Mattress Company, Snooze 2202 Jackson Avenue West in Oxford, the place to go for all of your bedding needs. Snooze has all the mattresses you know and love, all the Jameson products, Tempur-Pedic, all that that's there. Also, pillows, linens, accessories, bed frames, that's all there as well. Delivery and setup options, they're exceptional. Jacob and the people there at Snooze do a great job. It's gosnooze.com.
And podcast brought to you by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. 30 years old this year, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast, and all underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. So you're getting local underwriting that understands your market, also the leader in condo financing in Oxford. So check them out for that as well. And ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. Give them a call, 662-234-2704. Also, J Lowe, that's JLOWE, at communitymtg.com. We'll move on now. Barrett Salee, SEC Smothering Covered podcast, Sirius XM as well. Knowledgeable SEC guy. We'll talk really everything around the conference, some Ole Miss stuff. His thoughts on Ole Miss on the field and off the field heading into the 2017 season. So now, Barrett Salee on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
All right, Barrett, thanks for joining us here on the podcast. Hadn't talked to you in a while. First, I'm curious. I guess you're safe if you never have to leave your house. If you have to leave your house to go somewhere in Atlanta, are there roads you can traverse? Do you have to go buy a helicopter? I mean, what do you do?
Well, yeah, I'm thinking hovercraft might be the way to go. You know, it's hard out here. I mean, look, I work from home. I do the radio shows for Sirius XM at home. I do the podcast at home. I write from home. So I don't have to venture outside my neighborhood very often. And every time I do, I'm worried, like, am I going to get swallowed up by the road? And I think there's probably like a 60% chance it happens today. It's crazy around here. It's you know, the whole highway thing, like the crackhead who burned down the highway, allegedly, that really screwed everything up. I mean, there are people driving all over the place to get to places that you'd never think they'd be driving to just to avoid that area, which really sucks.
One more thing before we get to football. I know you're a pretty diehard Atlanta Braves fan. You have you've been to the new ballpark a few times, I think. I haven't been yet. I'm looking forward to it. As a guy who A, loves baseball, and B, loves ballparks, give me the review of SunTrust.
It's awesome. It's very fan friendly. It's, you know, every like area you go to inside the park is a different experience. So, like, you know, you can diversify your ticket choices and have a different experience every time. The food's great. The atmosphere's great. The whole place is like a museum. There's no more Braves museum. There is a monument garden area, but there's memorabilia just sort of up throughout the entire place too. So that's awesome. And then the better part is the battery is as enjoyable of a place as I've ever seen outside of the stadium. You know, it's a place where you can literally go hang out for 12 hours with, you know, your friends, your family, whoever, and have a good time and catch a ball game and also, you know, have some good food and do all kinds of other stuff. It's everything Turner Field was supposed to be and never was. I mean, I remember when they tore down part of Olympic Stadium and built Turner Field, they said they were going to build a mini village around it. And it never happened because, you know, it's just, you can't have, people don't want to go there on non-game days. I've been to the Battery probably six times on non-game days to hang out, to grab a bite, to go get some ice cream, to go shopping, whatever. it's just it radically changes the way you approach the game as a fan. And I think the one thing, and everyone freaked out about traffic, and I kept telling folks all, you know, the whole time, traffic is not going to be an issue. The reason it's not an issue is because there's A, like 50 different ways to get in, but B, everyone comes and leaves at different times. At Turner Field, everybody goes at the same time and leaves at the same time. Now at SunTrust, it's, you know, you got people going at 2 o'clock and hanging out. You got people going right before the first pitch. You got people, you know, staying till 1 or 2 in the morning partying. So it's a great time.
Yeah, that's cool. That's so smart of them to build that. It's like the Cubs did that with the park at Wrigley, and the Red Sox did that with that area. I haven't been to it, but I've read a lot about it and seen it right outside of Fenway, and it does a lot to change traffic patterns, because you're right, everyone's not coming at the same time and everyone's not leaving at the same time, so it's kind of cool. All right, let's talk some football.
Yeah.
Let's talk some football. I know you. I think you saw a couple of spring games. I know you've talked to a lot of people about different spring games. I'm going to start with Georgia, because I think you're one of the people that really thinks this is a. And please correct me if I'm wrong. This is a Georgia team that not only could win, but could win really big.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think you know, when you have a true freshman quarterback in Jacob Eason throw for 16 touchdowns and 8 picks, that's a good foundation. I know he wasn't great, but I mean, I don't think anybody should have expected greatness. So you combine that with Michelle and Chubb returning, that's a really solid foundation offensively. And then I was really impressed with the receivers at the spring game, and that sort of matched up to what I heard all spring about what was going on. They don't have a go-to receiver, but they've got a go-to receiver based on whatever situation a team dictates. There's not just one freak that they're going to rely on, but, you know, Eason has developed a chemistry with Javon Wims. They like Riley Ridley. He didn't play this spring. Terry Godwin is incredibly versatile. They're going to line Sony Michelle up at wide receiver. They've got Isaac Nauta at tight end up the seam. Tyler Simmons, J.J. Holloman are two young kids that they like a lot. Mecole Hardman's going to play the Adoree Jackson role for them. I mean, they've got really versatile, really, you know, abundant amount of weapons that they're going to use in different ways. So that was the biggest thing that stood out to me this spring. Offensive line-wise is the only other issue. I mean, defensively, they're pretty much all set. Offensive line-wise, you know, they didn't look good in the spring game, but Kirby even said it afterwards, you know, it was tee-off time. It was a passing-oriented scrimmage. You know, it's hard to function as an offensive line when the defense knows what's coming. So that, and I'm all about this, and, you know, and Neil, you've done this for a long time, Chase, you have too. You know, it's back in the day, you could go to a spring game and say, okay, well, you know, X, Y, and Z happened. That does or doesn't match up to what I personally saw in, you know, practice 4 or scrimmage 2 or whatever. Now, since you don't hear any of this stuff or don't see any of this stuff, you have to take what you hear and then sort of decide which dots to connect and which dots to just sort of ignore for now. And I heard all spring that the offensive line was great. And so because it was bad in the spring game, I'm not going to sit there and say, okay, well, they got a lot of work to do, because it contradicts what we heard all spring.
If everyone's right and Georgia's the team in the East that emerges, that means Tennessee doesn't win the East again. What does that do for Butch Jones? Has the window of opportunity kind of passed for him? I know they're still recruiting at a fairly high level, but I mean they lost a lot of talent off that team. They did not handle the pressure of being the favorite at all last year, in my opinion. We didn't see them because we were covering Ole Miss and they didn't intersect. But from the outside looking in, it looked like that bothered them. Is it kind of now or never for him, or has the window passed?
I don't say the window's passed, because they have recruited well. And, you know, this is a retooling year of sorts because of the roster turnover. But they're pretty confident in the roster they have. And more so than really, I think, people realize. So that's going to keep them competitive. I don't necessarily think the gauge is winning the East, because if Georgia goes 10-2 or 11-1 and wins the East, I mean, so be it. I mean, it's hard to win the division. And I don't think that is a realistic goal for a team that is retooling like Tennessee is, or at least has so many roster holes to fill. I mean, it'd be nice if they did it, obviously, and I think there's a possibility that they can, but I think it's more about, you know, how they look, how they approach the season, how Butch Jones learns from his mistakes from last year, and how what the trajectory is you know, after the season. If they go 9-3, have three close losses, and are, you know, lose a tiebreaker to Georgia or are a game out because they lost to Georgia, that's fine. I think that's enough, and that certainly, you know, is going to, you know, build momentum on the recruiting trail and keep momentum going in the next season. But if they, you know, if they're 8-4 and you have these inexplicable losses to Vanderbilt or South Carolina or whatever, that's different. So I don't necessarily know if the East title is the gauge, because it shouldn't be expected this year because of the holes they have to fill and the fact that it's kind of a, I wouldn't say a vacant sort of goal, but it's sometimes, you know, out of your control in what happens. I think it's more about how Butch handles the roster, handles the season, and if he's learned from his mistakes from last year, and there are plenty of them to learn from.
There were a couple. I tell you what's interesting to me. We were talking about the Ole Miss season yesterday on our podcast, and how there's a couple of games in there that, if you know, if you could have a little visit from the football gods, and they said, "Hey, tell me the outcome of a couple of games," you know, pick a couple of games, I'll tell you the outcome. It would tell me a lot about what Ole Miss does. One of them, for me, is Vanderbilt. They finished strong last year. Derek Mason went from essentially being fired to being given a contract extension and a raise. He beats Ole Miss, beats Tennessee. What do you look for from Vandy?
Well, I think they'll be able to run the football. I think they're pretty happy with their offensive line. Defensively, I don't know what they're going to be without Zach Cunningham, because he took a ton of pressure off everybody else. You know, Warren Brooks is a decent, you know, linebacker in this sort of new school, but he ain't Zach Cunningham. And so, you know, I think they've got a solid foundation, and they'll make you work for it because they'll be able to run. And I think Kyle Shermer's a pretty decent quarterback. I don't know what their upside is. You know, I don't know if they can be anything more than really a 6-6 type team, which, you know, may mean they beat Ole Miss. But, you know, I think there's going to be times where they look like what Vandy's supposed to look like, and that's a team that's overmatched and outman. So, you know, I think they'll be competitive. I think Vandy and Derek Mason are a pretty good match. I think they've gotten that figured out pretty well. And if they continue to be, you know, 6-6 type team, then, you know, that keeps Derek Mason around forever. But in terms of how they match up with Ole Miss, you know, Ole Miss may be a type of team that makes you go score for score with them this year. I don't know if Vandy's got that in.
My boy Ralph going to get any help at all?
I mean, he does. I mean, he gets help, but I mean,
not really.
You know, there's some other guys there, but you know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, it's not so much back in the backfield. It's what happens at receiver.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Kyle's a good quarterback. You know, because, you know, who are these guys that are going to go separate out downfield and really take pressure off the running game? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm messing around. I just
you're talking to the president of the Ralph Webb fan club.
Yeah.
Chase has quite the man crush on Mr. Webb.
I was getting offended as you named like 9 Vanderbilt players and hadn't named Mr. Webb yet. So we were just following up. No big deal. It's fine.
What do you think about Ole Miss? You mentioned, I mean, I'll be honest. If you told me they won 8 games, I'm not surprised. If you told me they lost 8 games, I'm not surprised. I don't know. They've obviously got a talented quarterback. They've got some weapons at receiver. I think their offensive line is going to be pretty good. I've got major questions about their running game. I have major questions about their linebacking core, their secondary to some extent. Even look, defensively, I just didn't think they were very good last year, and I don't think Dave Womack forgot how to coach. I didn't think they were good enough on that side of the ball, and I'm not sure that they're going to be that much better this year, but you probably know football 10 times more than I do. What do you think?
Well, I mean, offensively, you just described the same exact recipe that won them, earned them Peach Bowl bids and Sugar Bowl bids a couple of years ago.
Like, yeah.
A pretty good offensive line that's effective enough, no running game, a good quarterback, and a lot of receivers. And so I think that that can win you games, and Ole Miss has proven that. I think last year was sort of a different year in the SEC because that didn't win you games. I mean, and obviously Ole Miss had its other issues and injuries and whatever, but, you know, this year I think is going to be different. I think it's going to be more of an offensively driven season because of all the departures on the front seven, basically conference-wide. So that means I think Ole Miss has a better chance of just flat-out outscoring folks, going out there and just, you know, tiring people out and running up scores and winning games 45-40 if they have to. And that may be how they have to do it, because I'm with you on the defense. When Kimbichi and the rest of that crew were there, that was a really good defense. I mean, just from a pure personnel standpoint, they don't have that right now. So I'm with you in the sense that, you know, I think I could see them 4-8. I could see them 8-4. I don't necessarily think they're going to be up to the point where, you know, they're winning 9-10 games and would be going to New Year's Six Bowls had it not be for the ban. But I do think they're talented enough offensively to make life really, really miserable for several teams and spring an upset or two. But again, I think Ole Miss the situations are different. The scandals are different between Ole Miss and Baylor. But I think the effect could be the same. Remember, Baylor last year started out 6-0 and went 6-6. Yeah, I think Ole Miss is that kind of, you know, has that kind of volatility. You know, if something goes wrong, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Ole Miss is just like, I'm done. Like, I can't do this. Like, all these, because these players are sick of it. I mean, they, by and large, I mean, you guys know this, you know, you can sit there and cover a scandal and it can be the biggest news story, you know, in college football. 99% of the players have nothing to do with it. Like, they just don't. And they get sick of it. And so if things start going south or if you get suspended or whatever, I mean, there's a million different, you know, things that could happen. It wouldn't surprise me if they just kind of packed up shop.
That's why we picked those two swing games for Ole Miss. We were talking about it yesterday on the podcast. We went with Cal the third week of the season out there because that's probably high scoring for both teams. And then Vanderbilt, because sandwiched in between those two are trips to Alabama and Auburn, which may be the two best teams in the league, depending on how Jared Stidham does, at Auburn. So with Ole Miss, you're probably 2-0. They beat South Alabama. They beat UT Martin. They go to Cal. You win it, even when you come back from Alabama, those two trips, maybe you're 3-2. You beat Vanderbilt, you're 4-2. You got a couple home games against LSU and Arkansas. You see what happens. On the other side of that, though, if you lost to Cal, you could be 2-3. You play Vanderbilt. And then about the time that this starts happening is about the time that they're going to get the final sanctions.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the thing with Ole Miss is this. I mean, you know, you can sit there and say, okay, well, they're not going to go to a bowl. But if they go 8-4, they're going to be proud of themselves. Like, you cannot go to a bowl game and still be proud of yourself. But I'm with you. They have to get out to a hot start. They don't have the depth, so they better make sure they stay healthy and Paul Campbell. I'm with you on the spring games. I don't think, you know, Auburn and Alabama are winnable games for Ole Miss. I just think those two teams are too good. But you're right. I mean, if they get to that point with four wins and then have to play Arkansas and LSU, I don't think Arkansas is worth a damn. I mean, I think they're the worst team in the SEC West.
Really?
And then LSU, I mean, you know, if Ole Miss forces LSU into a point-a-minute football game, is Danny Etling the guy that's going to keep up with him? I don't know. Even against Ole Miss's defense, I don't know. So, you know, if they can manage that and not let the outside influence or outside stuff, you know, have too much of an impact inside the football bubble, they can have a pretty good season. But again, super volatile.
Arkansas, you intrigued me with that comment because I read, I guess it was his Rivals. One of the Rivals, Rob Cassidy, did something about, you know, the five programs that are kind of in make or break seasons. Of course, he mentioned Ole Miss because of the NCAA stuff, and mentioned Tennessee, and he mentioned Arkansas. You say they're the worst team in the SEC West. Please elaborate.
Yeah, I mean, I like what they are offensively, and I think the junior college transfers at wide receiver will sort of solidify the final piece of the puzzle, but at least from a skill player standpoint. But I don't trust their offensive line. And I really don't trust their defense. I mean, I like Paul Rhodes as a person. I like Paul Rhodes as the coach. I don't think going to a 3-4 defensive personnel who, you know, that by and large is not nearly as talented as some others in the SEC, and B, doesn't necessarily fit the scheme or hasn't really practiced the scheme for a while, is the right idea. I mean, look, Bijan Jackson's a pretty big-bodied nose at 335. Is he Terrence Cody? No, I don't think so. He's a good player, but he's not that good. Is McTelvin Ajeem the kind of difference maker 3-4 defensive end like Jonathan Allen was for Alabama? No. So yeah, I don't trust Arkansas. I think they've lost their identity. I think they've the offensive line struggles from last year will continue. And then defensively, I just don't know how they're gonna stop folks. I think You saw it last year with them. When teams went up against Arkansas that were bigger, badder, better in the trenches, Arkansas not only lost, they got their butts whipped. And that's, I think, where Rhett Bielema has to fix that identity, because that's not supposed to be the identity of Arkansas football. It's not supposed to be the identity of Rhett Bielema coach team. But that's where they are right now. I don't know if they're going to get it back anytime soon.
You know, I piss a lot of people off here sometimes when I say what I'm about to say yet again. I think Dan Mullen's a really good football coach. I don't think he's in a place that's easy to recruit to. I think it's hard to recruit kids that aren't Mississippi kids to go play there, and there aren't enough kids in Mississippi to satisfactorily fill out two SEC rosters, and that makes winning there problematic. It's my opinion. I probably have, in that description, pissed off Ole Miss and Mississippi State. So I'm doing really well. Yeah, I liked what I saw out of Fitzgerald late last season. They came to Oxford and just blew Ole Miss off the field. What do you think about their team this year? Is this a season where they can surprise, or is this a season where they're still so limited from a talent standpoint that 6-7 wins is a max?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can surprise. I think Fitzgerald is, you know, good enough on the ground to really make things interesting against opposing defenses and make defensive coordinators work. And then I think they do have some weapons, whether it be Gray or other folks outside. You know, I think the biggest question is offensive line for them. And I think they've got enough to make life miserable for other teams. 8 wins wouldn't totally surprise me. And then defensively, they were a disaster last year, and I'm not the biggest Todd Grantham fan, but I'm becoming more of a Todd Grantham fan after what he's changed about himself from Georgia to Louisville, and then assumed from Louisville to Mississippi State. They're way more aggressive. They have that mentality that Dan Mullen wants to have, that had really transcended multiple coordinators. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I think they're dangerous. I don't know if they're, you know, dangerous like 2014 when they were number one in the country, but they're dangerous enough to have a say in who wins the SEC West if they, you know, spring an upset or two.
I'm curious, sitting tremendously fair question, so if you don't want to answer it, I understand. You're on the outside looking in, yet you know a lot of people. What's kind of your overall thought on Ole Miss's NCAA thing? What's kind of your gut feeling as to what might happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think the more and more it sort of transpires and sort of evolves, the more it sounds like Ole Miss is going to have a decision to make. I mean, I think it's pretty fair to assume at this point that that Hugh Freeze will get at least some sort of suspension. I don't know if because this is some of the charges, the unethical charge wasn't as serious as some basketball coaches that are, you know, so I guess somewhat comparable in terms of the allegations, you know, maybe it's not going to be as severe, but, I think it doesn't really matter how long it is. And it doesn't really matter, if it's another bowl ban. I think It was a mistake for Ole Miss to have that pseudo press conference without press and basically back Hugh Freeze when the second notice came out, because it backed them into a corner. And they, I think at this point, it does seem like that some support for Freeze has been waning a little bit. Whether that's with decision makers that can, you know, heavily influence the decision or not, it still seems like it's happening, but it's happening slowly. And so, you know, I think they're going to have a decision to make. If it looks like the program's going to suffer for 3-4 years, I just don't see how you can decide as an administration to keep backing your guy, because Ole Miss has got, you know, a track record now of a reasonable amount of success. I mean, you can sit there and say, okay, Ole Miss had all these recruiting violations and all these other violations, and that's why they went through the Beach Bowl and the Sugar Bowl. No, I mean, they won those games. I saw with my own eyes, they're a good football team. They can get talented players to that campus, maybe not as many as they did in the past, but they can still get them. So I think if it looks like it's going to be the reset button, which I think it's fair to assume that that's probably where Ole Miss is headed. You probably need to reset with a new head coach, because Hugh Freeze, while he's done a lot for that program, to help that program, I think it's going to be hard to keep him around when it's pretty clear that all of the eyes of the NCAA are going to still be on him. It's just, there's no reason to go down that road.
Last thing, Alabama's entire roster was drafted on the last weekend. They're down to like no players, yet they just gave Saban a gazillion million dollars. All jokes aside, is there any reason to believe that this is the year that somebody, and I would assume that somebody would have to be Auburn, is there any reason to believe this is the year that somebody besides Alabama goes to Atlanta?
Yeah, I mean, I can see it. I think the thing with Alabama is, okay, what happens if the passing game doesn't improve the way that it needs to? It looked like it did in the spring game. It was one spring game. So against a defense that by and large didn't blitz until the second, you know, half, late in the second half, when, incidentally, both quarterbacks started to struggle. You know, so if the passing game doesn't progress, then that, I think, is going to be much more of an impact this year than last year, because like I said before, you know, last year was a defensively driven year in the SEC. This year, I think, is going to be much more offensively driven. So there's going to be multiple teams, I think, in the SEC that will say, okay, if you're, you know, we can play point-of-minute football with you, Alabama, come score with us, like Clemson did. And, you know, if they can't do it, then they may lose some games. And I do think that there's better teams out there. Auburn, I think, is a legit title contender. LSU, I think, is a team that is certainly going to be improved. Don't necessarily trust Danny Etling, but still improved. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's possible. I think it's, I wouldn't say it's probable at this point, but, you know, looking at the way it shakes out, it wouldn't surprise me at all if you know, the SEC West is decided in Jordan Hare Stadium when the Iron Bowl takes place. And, you know, I mean, I think that's a team that can go point for point with Alabama and going to be at home. And so, you know, it's possible. And I think the other thing for Alabama is, look, I mean, they lost all these defensive players. That's tough to do. They still have Deron Payne. They still got Deshaun Hand, Rashawn Evans, Sean Dan Hamilton, all those guys, right? But what happens if they don't get, like, look at last year in the title game. They lost the title game, in my opinion, because right, it was Ryan Anderson got tackled by, I think, Wayne Gallman, it may have been Renfro, on a fumble. Like, that's the reason they lost the title game, because they had counted on that so much during the course of the season to turn games sideways.
Yeah.
You can't count on that. So, this year they may not get that. So what happens if they don't? Do they still have the ability to maintain their composure when games don't get incredibly sideways based on one play? I don't know.
It's a good point. They won in Oxford by creating scores on defense. I mean, they were in trouble that day.
That's how they won like six games.
Yeah.
They won like six games that way.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't mean that to take anything away from what they did. I mean, that's part of defense. If you can score points, man, all power to you. It's hard to do, and they did a lot of it last year. It was one hell of a playmaking defense.
Games.
Yeah, absolutely. It
and
changed
it,
multiple
I mean,
games.
It turns games sideways. I mean, think about what happens in that Clemson game if that's a stupid score. I mean, the game's over. Like, and then you look at it, Clemson holds them to three, and it's like, oh my God, Clemson. Like, literally, I remember thinking at that time, Clemson's going to win this football game now. Like, because it changes the game so much. So, you know, they may be able to keep doing that. I don't think they can, because some of that is luck. But, I mean, if they don't get those, then how do they react in tight games? I don't know.
Well, Barrett, really appreciate the time so much. As always, it's great to catch up with you. And maybe I'll see you sometime this summer when the Cubs go to Atlanta or something. Maybe we'll catch up.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. Let me know. We'll have some one of the or several of the 150 draft craft beers at Yard House at the Battery, which is fantastic.
I'm sold. All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Impressive. See you guys.
Bye.
Thanks to Barrett for joining us today. Podcast brought to you in part by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. MasterCuts, full-service lawn maintenance and landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding areas. Again, they took care of my yard this week. They do what they said they're going to do when they said they're going to do it. And they have open and honest communication with their customers and employees. No job too large or small for MasterCuts. Services include landscape design and installation, landscape lighting, irrigation installation, maintenance, and turf installation. They even do holiday lighting for your yard during the holiday season. Get a free quote if you like. 662-607-7773. MasterCutsLawn.com on the internet. And if you sign up for an annual contract, mention the podcast. First cut is on them.
Podcast also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. He is a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. The land market is very hot right now. If you're on the fence about selling your land, your hunting club share, or your home with acreage, now is the time. Give Michael a call today. He's ready to meet with you and explain the process. If you can't earn your business in that meeting, he doesn't deserve it. He's with Tom Smith Land and Homes. Just go to his sites, gotland.com, got-land.com, and then get in touch with him, 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com. And the podcast brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home and all the benefits the big mega banks provide. OUB offers all the technology and products you can want, all with the personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person, all without having to press 10 buttons. No 5-minute wait. OUB has the absolute best free checking account you'll find anywhere. It is called Kasasa. Comes complete with cash back or interest options. If you have a Kasasa account, OUB will refund your ATM fees nationwide. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured.
Ole Miss softball's RPI 20 as of right now. They are just behind the University of Louisiana at 19. So,
whoa.
That's what it says on the page. From NCAA.com.
Well, let me tell you, you can tell the NCAA.com exactly where to stick it.
You're saying the NCAA is not always right and all-knowing?
Damn right I am.
Okay.
That's exactly what I'm saying. The University of Louisiana is located in Monroe.
Maybe they're down now a little bit. They are 28-16. Used to be a complete power. Ole Miss ahead in the RPI of Arizona State. Back in the day, Arizona State softball was like, you know, the Pac-12 teams were always really, really good when it first kind of got started.
I thought it was Arizona, not Arizona
State. Well,
they were
good too.
It was so good.
UCLA, Cal maybe was good back when it was getting
going. Saw the picture of Oregon celebrating a home run in softball.
One girl was
Arizona.
Very excited.
Very excited.
Yes. Showing her appreciation for said home run.
In a remarkably intimate sort of way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Florida, by the way, 46-4.
That's pretty good.
Might be the favorite.
If you win 46 of your 50 games routinely,
mm-hmm.
things will likely end well.
Unless you lost two in a row at some point when
that
it matters.
That is true, but from a statistical standpoint, if you win 46 of every 50 games, you're probably going to have a championship or two somewhere.
12-2 on the road, 13-0 neutral site, 21-2 at home.
And if you go 13-0 on neutral sites, you win all your neutral site games. Let me just go ahead and tell you, it's going to be a great year.
It's going to be a trophy somewhere.
Somewhere
there.
You're getting a trophy.
Yeah.
And it won't be a participation trophy.
Arizona, you speak of, is 47-5.
I like their chances. But I think I saw one of the five. Florida, maybe that's why Oregon celebrated so dramatically.
Florida State's 47-3.
That's pretty good.
Oregon, as you mentioned, 41-6.
Oklahoma's normally really good.
They are. They Ole Miss went to their regional last year. Oklahoma 44-8 this year.
Falling off a little bit. Norman. Fire somebody, damn it.
Lot of SEC and Pac-12. Pretty much two conferences running this bitch. I mean, it's
unbelievable, isn't it?
I mean, well, the SEC didn't really care about the sport. Then suddenly they cared, and suddenly they caught up very, very fast.
Yeah,
it's almost like when you have talent and money, and you decide, hey, we're gonna take a shot here, and it worked out.
It's amazing how that works.
Yeah. I have the ability and the resources? Oh, well.
We got to talk to Jay because at some point he might have been on to something. You know, I picked on him for a couple of years. They've covered the hell out of softball.
Features, news stories, constant.
It's his beat, and then Brian does the baseball beat. Because this year they're good in baseball, too. I think a couple of years ago, Jay will never admit this, but I think a couple of years ago it was, God, we being Auburn are so shitty in baseball that we got to find – no one's even clicking this because I know this is going to shock people. No one clicks – no one reads when teams are just awful and the coach is not going anywhere. If you're awful and there's a really good chance the coach is going somewhere, people will read it. If it's awful and stagnant, it's completely off. And so I wonder how much he went, you know what, I'm going to go cover something else. And covered softball, and then it got going. He covers softball so much, they must be getting clicks.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm assuming. So. I don't know. But nonetheless, Ole Miss, good season going on as of this broadcast, 33-17 overall for the Rebels. They were like 100 fans away from breaking the attendance record for a season, and they got rained out last night.
Yeah. Turns out they probably could have gotten the game in.
Yeah. Moved it up at least, played Southern Miss, and gotten your record. Men's golf, you probably already know by the time you listen to the podcast, they find out their destination for NCAA Regionals today at 11 o'clock. I think the Golf Channel is doing a selection show for that, safely in the tournament. Probably a 4 seed is my guess in a regional somewhere. I believe they have to finish top 5 to advance to Nationals. There's 6 different regional options that they could be sent to. I'm assuming they are getting they're hoping to be sent to somewhere in Middle Tennessee as they have played that course already this year and have a title on it. So, that is what's going on. That's kind of your schedule there. Really appreciate Chris Landry and Barrett Salee's time today on the podcast. We don't know. We'll let you know about tomorrow as the day kind of moves on a little bit. But a couple guests to tide you over, and we'll talk to you again soon.